Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, we're interviewing candidate for Assembly District 25, Deanna Sandy, here for the whole show on all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Hit the open road with a truckload of cash free play in one of three luxury travel trailers during the $250,000 travel time giveaways. Thousands in weekly giveaways plus $7,500 in grand prizes guaranteed. And a new travel trailer or $35,000. Now at the Carson Valley Inn.
Welcome to the Winnemucca Big R.
Hi, I'm John Walker. Welcome to Big R Lovelock.
Hi, I'm Rich Martin. Welcome to Fallon Big R.
My name is Braden. Welcome to Big R Fernley.
Hi, I'm Kelly. Welcome to Big R Sparks.
As you know, Reno is booming. Tolls Development Company is helping it grow with insightful design and development, building community with every project, adding beauty, adding excitement, emphasizing our shared humanity. Reno is becoming bigger. Tolls Development is helping it become better, more livable, more enjoyable. To learn more, go to tollsdevelopment.com. tollsdevelopment.com.
Save money and take transit. Did you know you can ride the bus all day for less than what it would cost you for a gallon of gas? Plan your trip now by going to rtcwashoe.com.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Chan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Chan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we are pleased to welcome for the first time to Nevada Newsmakers, Deanna Sandy. She is candidate for Assembly District 25. Pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
This is your first run for political office.
This is.
Why?
Oh, the burning question. I've always known, actually, I was going to run. It was, for me, a matter of when that would be. But, you know, working in during COVID, feeling like I served the community during COVID, working at the university, hired to be the liaison between the Hispanic community and, you know, science, if you will, translating all the information. I learned a lot in that time, and I started to see a divide growing that concerned me, to be honest with you. And as the only Republican in my department at that time, I just realized that I could, and I did it very well, have the discourse when we didn't agree. And I also started kind of putting a kibosh on some of the notions of, oh, if you're a Hispanic, which I am, then therefore you must be, you know, a Democrat, and, you know, kind of proving a lot of things wrong. So I knew I should run. I knew I would do it well. I knew that I could bring a perspective that could be unique, you know, growing up in so many different countries and really understanding clearly for me how much I don't like big government, because I've lived in countries that were under dictatorships and all of that. I have an eclectic upbringing.
All right, so let's hit some of those things. So first of all, name the places where you grew up. I know Puerto Rico is one of them.
Right. Well, I was born in Puerto Rico. My parents are from the island. My dad was actually born in the U.S. in Jersey and grew up in New York. When we were kids, he was actually a pastor. So, you know, we lived in New York for a little bit, and then we lived in Connecticut, and then he decided that he wanted to get his education. And he was the first in his family to get a master's. He was accepted to Wharton School of Business on a full ride. And right after he graduated, he was hired by a big, you know, multi-billion dollar company, and we would travel, you know, every 2 years to a new country. So I've lived in Costa Rica, Paraguay, I've spent time in Uruguay, I went to boarding school in Argentina, spent time in Bolivia, in Brazil. So I still speak Portuguese as well.
All right, so you know that's quite a resume of places that you've been to. What did that experience teach you?
It's interesting because at the time, you know, moving around, especially as an adolescent, I was always thinking like, this is terrible, I have to make friends again. But one of the biggest strengths that I have now as an adult is my ability to adapt quickly and assimilate and really look at, I like to say making lemonade out of lemons, right? Kind of what can I learn from any situation, right? So, because it's all, you know, moving around from culture to culture, even though it was most of the time speaking the same language, there were times that I would use the same word that I knew in Spanish that was offensive in another country.
Right.
So, but yeah, I'm very grateful. It's given me so much perspective, and I have so many different unique experiences, you know, being an American, growing up outside of this country, and then coming back, you know, when I was 17, so.
You know, what's interesting to me is that, you know, and you're right, of course, about the perspective, and I don't think a lot of people that don't travel in this country really lose out on that. But you mentioned Bolivia, and the first thought that sprang to my mind was that most people would not know Bolivia except for the place where Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid ended up at the end of the movie, right?
Oh my gosh.
I mean, if you said to most people, find Bolivia on a map,
right,
they probably wouldn't know where to start.
And it's beautiful. I mean, beautiful. I got super sick. We went to La Paz, which, as you know, is very, the altitude is just, you know, climbing to get there. You're like, am I going to make it? But this was, you know, the 90s when I was there. But I also grew up in a time in Latin America where it was very dangerous, and there was always a threat of kidnapping. And, you know, there was a point in time that we had, you know, bodyguards and detail because my dad worked for an American company, and there were instances of executives' wives being kidnapped. And so I have a very different perspective on what it means to feel protected, right? What it means to be under big government. I've seen it. I haven't had to read about, you know, dictatorships and socialism and all of that.
So. All right, so it has nothing to do with the Assembly District, mm-hmm. but I'm just curious as to what you think about what's going on along the border, mm-hmm. and the fact that here in Nevada, we need employees in construction, we
right.
need employees in hospitality, we need employees in agriculture.
Right.
And yet, all of those businesses are starving, and we could be doing so much better
right.
if we had more people. What's your thoughts on that?
I mean, the issue on the border is scary because the way I see it is, you know, it's equivalent to having the door open to our house. Nobody, you know, wants to just leave the door open and not know who's in their house. And so, you know, I think there's a couple of different things that we cannot agree on, right? And the different parties cannot agree on isn't in how. But the reality is that we cannot have people here without knowing who is here and where they're coming from and really understanding, right? Because most countries have some form of a way to, you know, immigrate into a country, and unfortunately we don't. We need to find better ways to make that happen. But I agree with you. I mean, we need more people to work in all of the industries. You know, now, you know, we have so many jobs and not enough people to fill them, and with our birth rate, you know, decreasing, all of those, we have to start thinking of long term how some of these decisions affect, you know, all of us.
And also, you know, for Social Security and Medicare, we need a certain amount of people to
mm-hmm.
support the people on
right.
those programs.
Right.
And we are falling short of that at a time when the funding is not available.
Exactly.
But all right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about Nevada issues, but I was curious to get your perspective after this timeout.
Story County is leading Nevada. Home of the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center, Google, Tesla, Panasonic, and other world-leading companies. Story County provides thousands of tech, advanced manufacturing, and logistics careers for Nevadans. We're diversifying and driving Nevada's economy and generating millions in tax revenue and billions in economic activity across northern Nevada. Story County is leading Nevada's future.
Pro Group Management offers workers' comp services to a growing number of industries.
As businesses grow and change with the times, the need for a solid workers' comp program must be flexible and up to date. The evolving nature of regulations can make staying ahead of complex tasks challenging. But Pro Group Management simplifies the work so your industry can move forward and succeed. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday, trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
What do you count on? You count on your power every day. At NV Energy, we've always powered what's important to you. But we're not looking at the past. We're focused on the future. While our standards are high, our rates will remain low. And our commitment to renewables isn't just meeting standards, but leading the way. Because you can count on more than just your power. You can count on the company who brings it to you. That's our promise. You can count on it.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Diana Sandy. She is a candidate for Assembly District 25. So let's talk about some of the issues. You're involved through the university with issues concerning mental health.
Currently, yes. So I run a program where we look at mental health through the lens of policy. It's a grant through the National Office of Minority Health.
Okay, so, you know, I've been dealing with this for over 40 years, that Nevada has never had enough money into mental health. But I also look at it as this is such a vast issue that, you know, it's great to say the words, but it's so much bigger than that. And you have, for example, in the school system, at K through 12, as well as in higher ed, you know, they have become mental health counselors. And they don't get paid for that.
And they shouldn't. You know, I mean, they shouldn't be mental health counselors.
So where do you see the biggest priority? And then the second question that goes along with it is, where do we find the mental health professionals when every state in the union needs them?
Those are wonderful questions. And actually, when I think about what I would like to do, you know, when I get elected, if I get hopefully I get elected, is really find a plan to bring in the providers, right, in a diverse set of mental health providers, you know, whether it be school psychologists, which we know we need more of. My son, my youngest, is actually on the spectrum, and, you know, really addressing the needs of the schools in terms of getting more kids diagnosed. Because, you know, as a parent, once you understand how these children, you know, operate and how we can get success for them, right, it changes their lives. But, you know, from a mental health perspective, we need to all start having just the conversation and be creative on creating this foundation, right, to bring it into Nevada. Because mental health is connected to everything, whether it be education, you know, homelessness, our veterans, the opioid problems. We just really need to involve mental health in all conversations.
So where should it start? I mean, should it start in the schools? Should we be having special counselors? That you know, would have a class, a curriculum.
I mean, we can talk about mental health literacy. That's a big one, but you know, as I understand it, we just need more school psychologists. Also, you know, we need more support in the schools from a mental health perspective. But the community also needs support from a mental health perspective. So you know, we can talk about just access. But you know, I'm very conscious as a Latina that there are some cultural roadblocks, you know, to this. And so really beginning the conversation of education, which is what we do in the program that I run, you know, we talk about what is stress. And these are children. These are kids 12 to 17, middle and high school. And just even having the conversation of what is the stress cycle? How do we manage it? What kind of words can we use? You know, we talk about an acronym called RAIN. which is recognize, allow, investigate, and nurture. So kind of pushing the stress through, right? You know, we move through stress, not hold it in. And I've told my youth, and I said, you know, if I had learned these skills as a middle schooler, where would I be today? I mean, I'm passionate about mental health, and it's, you know, one day, I'm running for office now, but one day I hope to get a PhD in social psychology, but these are skills that I learned as an adult.
Okay, but a point should be made that some of us do need stress in our lives to function. You know, my cardiologist told me after I had a heart attack in 94 that I need stress, that if I don't have stress, it's more stressful than not having stress.
That's interesting.
Which sounds crazy, doesn't
that's
it?
That's interesting.
But that's a reality for right. certain kinds
the
of people.
The push and the pull, yeah. right?
Let's talk about autism for a second. Mm-hmm. You know, a few years ago, due to people like Ralph Tawdry and the Coalition for Autism in the state, the Autism Coalition of Nevada, there was a tremendous amount of work done towards helping families. Governor Jim Gibbons was wonderful in that sense. I know he gets a lot of heat for a lot of other things, but in that area, he was fabulous. But I went down to Davis, and I talked to people at the University of Davis there who are studying autism. And one of the things that shocked me was that they said, one of the problems is we don't have enough cadavers. And I said, what do you mean? They said, well, we need to be able to look at the brain of people with autism and be able to, you know, slice it up and look slice by slice to see what are the causes of autism. And it's going to take a long time for us to be able to get, you know, a big enough sample of that. Mm-hmm. And it just gave me a realization that as much money as we want to put in and as much help as we want to give, this is an incredibly long-term problem.
Right, and I guess it's all about perspective, right? Kind of bringing it back to that, because the way I look at, you know, my son and my oldest is actually was just diagnosed as an adult with autism, is that they're a gift. They have, I call it superpowers that are unique. And so I think it's great to look at maybe what the causes are, but that's not going to help a parent or a mom
Correct.
Or a single mom day to day, trying to understand, you know, why their child is having a tantrum about their socks for 3 hours and then worried about, are they going to function in school? Will they have friends? Can they have loving relationships? So for me, that's in the vein of behavior, right? Which is kind of what I'm more passionate about, is addressing, you know, the why the behavior happens and then helping the child, in this case, my son, understand that, you know, there are certain things about his environment that bother him and that's never going to change. But how he interacts with his environment can absolutely change, right? And he can use words, right? But there's just a lot of things, like with our son, we've had to be in occupational therapy to teach him social skills that most kids just learn by play therapy.
Right.
But he has had to formally learn that.
But I guess the issue for the state, mm-hmm. my opinion, is that, you know, right now and for the last decade or more, we've had parents taking care of children that perhaps have more severe autistic problems
right.
than your kids do. And eventually, those parents are going to pass.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to become responsibility of the state. And what happens then?
Right.
Where's the funding for
right.
that? You know,
facilities, you know, bringing these facilities in. So again, when I think about, you know, what we can do, you know, at the legislature is start thinking about how do we get some of these facilities, whether it is, you know, my passion is more in the vein of children, right? So we start with these facilities for kids, but then we start thinking of other avenues, you know, to bring them in for adults as well. But really moving
because they're aging
back,
out of the system.
Right, and moving back to understanding that looking at mental health and removing some of the stigma around mental health is very, very important. But starting to have the conversations starts to normalize it a little bit more and starts to, you know, remove stigma, right?
Do you think it's become more normalized over the last decade? Because to me, it seems like it's not something where people go, oh, what is that? It seems that people are more aware.
I don't think it's, they might be more aware, but I don't think it's normalized. I think the stigma is as great as it's ever been. One of my youngest brothers is bipolar and schizophrenic. And that, you know, when you're dealing with that type of, you know, mental health disorder is difficult on how the community around him perceives him, right? If he's a threat, if he's, you know, not on his meds. And that's a whole nother, obviously, you know, the more difficult types of conversations that we also need to have. But we need to start thinking about this. If we're looking at economic development, we're looking at growth, mental health needs to be a part of the conversation.
All right, let's take another break and we'll be right back after this timeout.
Retail's impact on Nevada's economy? Enormous. 8,600 businesses, large and small, employing 145,000 workers. And last fiscal year, retail paid tax on nearly $60 billion in sales. We're the Retail Association of Nevada. We support retail. We help it grow. And we mean business.
RANNV.org.
The Nevada Builders Alliance has been protecting the interests of the construction industry for over 50 years. Our programs save members thousands of dollars every year and allow them to provide much-needed benefits to their employees. Our industry also allows Nevada to grow. If you're thinking about a career in the construction industry, reach out. And if you haven't thought of a career in construction, what are you waiting for? We are the Nevada Builders Alliance.
For 50 years, Nevada Heating has been keeping people comfortable in their homes. At Nevada Heating, call the Do It Right guys and get the air conditioning back on today. That's the Nevada Heating way. Why sweat for days on end when Nevada Heating can get your air conditioning fixed today? Call us today and we'll fix it today at 323-5585 or schedule us on our website at nevadaheating.com.
Turn your clunker into a caddy during the Cadillac and Cash giveaways at Tamarack Casino. Weekly cash drawings including $5,000 cash and one top prize of $10,000. Win the grand prize of a Cadillac CT4 or $40,000 in cash. Your good times are at Tamarack Casino.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Deanna Sandy. She's candidate for Assembly District 25. You say on your website that you're passionate about education. I think everybody is. Governor Lombardo, who's supporting you, is also, you know, wants to be the education governor. We put in $2 billion in the last session, plus another $250 million. Right. And the unions are coming back and saying we need more. The number of $1 billion has been thrown around. When asked for results, the response is, well, it takes time for that money to work through the system. What are your thoughts on what we should be looking at in the next session regarding education, and what kind of results should we be looking for, right, if any, at this point in time?
I mean, I personally believe that we should start really looking at legislation that has a metric for measurement built into it.
For
so
example,
that, you know, I work in research, right? And so it's like, you know, no matter what the metric you set, setting a metric is important. This many people, you know, if we look at in education, and I talk about this often, we can look at what's already been measured, right? And that is reading, and reading at grade level. We know that currently most of the students in Nevada are not reading at grade level, at any grade, right? But we also know that when kids read at grade level by third grade, the probability of success, like, it quadruples. I mean, it's huge, right? And so if we can just start focusing on our kids as they enter school and reading by three and having the funding allocated for that, there's measurement in that. There's direct measurement in that.
Let me ask you this, though, because it's so interesting. We have issues with reading in school, mm-hmm, and yet every kid has a cell phone. Every kid is reading on their cell phone. How do we juxtapose those two diametric situations?
Right. Oh, the cell phone issue. Personally, I believe that this generation, and this is where it gets a little bit, you know, kind of foggy, because this generation kind of communicates with the use of the different medias and technology, and we do not, right? However, the problem with the cell phones, especially in schools, is their ability to be present. And that really starts to disturb whether the kid is paying attention or not. So, I mean, they should, if that's the question, they should be removed from the schools. I'm surprised that that hasn't, you know, been removed to this, you know, this day. But a lot of the kids, even with phones, are not reading. They're not even really writing. There's the spell check. So they're not learning fundamental skills to help them.
Okay. Now, I'm gonna just push back a little on that.
Do it.
When I was a kid, you know, which is, you know, a couple of centuries ago, you know, we had to do math and show the work. And then they came out with calculators. And in the beginning, they said, well, you can't use calculators, you know, that's cheating. And now, who would think of not using a calculator?
Right.
I mean, so we have to go along with the fact that technology exists.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, my grammar is way improved in my writing because of technology. I mean, I do go back to check to make sure the words haven't changed.
Right.
But I know where to put the commas now.
But, like, even to your point with the calculator, when you use something like a calculator or a phone as a tool, it's absolutely great. You can't use it as a crutch, right? And so a lot...
Where's the dividing line, though?
I mean, that is the question, right? But, you know, we can use, and they use technology in schools. A lot of what's happening now is to utilize that. But we can't assume that just because someone has a calculator, they automatically know how to do calculus, right? Like, you still need... You know, you can do some of the more complex problems and do it a little bit quicker with the calculator, of course. But I don't believe that just because someone has a phone that they're necessarily learning all the skills that they need.
All right, and I agree with you. Fundamentals are important. That's where we got to leave it. I've enjoyed the conversation. Please come back.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are very welcome, and we'll be right back.
Imagine a magical garden that feeds Carson City's hungry and homeless, teaches our high school students agriculture, creates hanging floral displays to beautify downtown, and yet charges nothing. It's not magic. It's the Greenhouse Project. It's real, it's growing, and it needs your help. Go online to carsoncitygreenhouse.org so together we can grow it forward.
Calamity, it lurks around every corner. Or not. That's why UMC Quick Care is around every corner with locations around the valley. UMC Quick Care, for all your small calamities.
Modern boutique Ahern Hotel and Event Center sits at the heart of the Las Vegas Strip. Two floors of meeting and event space are ideal for groups and conventions. Stay in one of 200 luxurious rooms and suites. Brand your event throughout the property. Flexible event spaces make for easy planning and personalization. Take over the entire hotel with a full buyout option.
Thanks for watching Nevada Newsmakers. You can catch us online 24 hours a day at NevadaNewsmakers.com, or you can download the podcast wherever you like to get your podcast. We'll see you on the next broadcast.